Welcome to Yale Cancer Center Answers with Drs. Francine Foss and Anish Chagpar. Dr. Foss is a professor of medical oncology and dermatology specializing in the treatment of lymphomas. Dr. Chagpar is associate professor of surgical oncology and director of the Breast Center at Smilow Cancer Hospital at Yale New Haven. If you'd like to join the conversation, you can contact the doctors directly. The address is canceranswers@yale.edu and the phone number is 1-888-234-4YCC. This week, Dr. Chagpar is joined by Rachel Hayes and Heather Glazer for a conversation about ovarian cancer awareness. Here's Anish Chagpar.
So why don't we start off, Rachel, with you telling us a little bit about yourself and how you got involved with this whole concept.
I am a 32-year-old. I'm a school teacher. I work in Naugatuck, Connecticut as a special education teacher. I'm a mom of three kids, two boys and a stepdaughter who's in high school. And last September in 2012, I was diagnosed with a rare form of ovarian cancer. And I have known Heather for over 10 years and fell out of touch and through a kind of a strange accumulating events, ran back in touch with her, and she ended up being one of the founders of the Connecticut Women of Hope. So we reconnected, and I was able to excitingly join the group. You know, feeling being a survivor now, it's nice to be able to reach out and help other people and to spread the awareness of ovarian cancer.
So, Heather, tell us a little bit about your story.
I was diagnosed in November of 2010. I had a routine physical, and based on that, the doctor suggested I have some more testing done. And at that time, I was told I needed a hysterectomy, but, you know, I didn't have to do it right away. Ended up waiting about 6 months, got a second opinion, and basically was told I need to have surgery right away because it could be cancerous. And lucky for me, it was stage 1B. So I had to go through 6 rounds of chemo. But in the end, I've been cancer-free for a year and a half now, and I'm doing really well. But, you know, it's our passion to really spread the word about ovarian cancer and the awareness, because a lot of people don't know. There is no testing for ovarian cancer. And, you know, people younger and younger are getting ovarian cancer. And if it's not caught in the early stages, there's only a 30% survival rate right now of ovarian cancer, and we are both extremely lucky, but we want to raise awareness so we can have more survivors.
You know, it is absolutely compelling and shocking, I think, to many of our audience to hear how both of you, very young women, were diagnosed with ovarian cancer. And ovarian cancer, as you say, is one of these diseases that tends to present late, that doesn't have, you know, a test like a mammogram that you can do.
Nicknamed the silent killer.
Right.
A lot of times you'll see it posted that way. It's the silent killer.
So tell us a little bit about how it was found in each of you, and what are the early signs that people should be looking for?
I have a history of kidney stones, and back in early of 2012, I think it was around May, I had some lower flank pain, abdominal pain, and I went into the emergency room, and they did a CAT scan and realized I wasn't passing any kidney stones, but incidentally, I had two small teratomas on my right ovary, and according to the doctor at the emergency room, teratomas are usually benign. Less than 1% come back cancerous. And he made me feel very okay about having the teratomas and sent me home to follow up with my gynecologist. 2 weeks later, I followed up with the gynecologist. And again, he was like, nope, there's no reason to really look at these. You know, when you look on the internet what a teratoma is, it's kind of, they call it a monster tumor in Greek terms, because it usually has like teeth and hair and bone kind of fragments in the tumor. So I was like, I want them out. And my gynecologist, no, there's no reason to worry about it. And luck, you know, I went off of that, and he said, we'll have an ultrasound in 3 months to see if they've grown. 3 months, it was August, came around, I had my ultrasound. They didn't grow. However, from that time to August, from maybe May to August, I was having bloating, gas problems. I was going to the bathroom quite frequently to the point where it was interfering with work and sleep. And my gynecologist gave me a pill for urinary incontinence, you know. And again, I was told not to worry about these things. I was very tired and fatigued and, you know, I was having hormonal kind of menstrual kind of cycle symptoms, but not on a cycle, just constantly and very, very tired. And my body systemically was very, I was having a lot of inflammation and it was aggravating kind of like a connective tissue disorder that I have too. And then August, right, that teratomas were the same exact size. And then about 2 weeks later, I felt a mass right above my pelvic bone. And it reminded me, I don't know, a lot of women know that when you hit a certain part of your pregnancy, you start feeling the baby grow and it's right above your pelvic bone. But it was off to the right. And I had taken pregnancy tests and I actually had two false negatives. And, you know, so I went back to the gynecologist and upon internal exam, he felt that there was a mass there. 2 days later, I went for an ultrasound and it was a size of a softball within 3 weeks. So they scheduled, again, they weren't worried about cancer. They scheduled my cystectomy and to remove it. And a week later, which actually September 21st was the day they removed my cancer. They removed it. By the time they removed it a week later, so about 4 weeks from the August CAT scan, it was the size of a small melon. And they ended up taking my right ovary and right fallopian tube. And again, my doctor was quite certain it wasn't cancer because immature teratomas are less than 1% chance of cancer. And a week later, the dates stick in my head, September 28th, my doctor told me that it was an immature teratoma and it was cancer and that I was to go see an oncologist. And, you know, a week later, I was at the oncologist and it was a grade 3 tumor along with staging. And I was never appropriately staged because when they did the surgery, no one had the thought of me being cancer. And so I was luckily stage 1A, the lowest stage possible. But my tumor came back at a grade 3, which needed 3 rounds of chemo just to kind of like a precautionary, you know, just in case there is any cancer cells hidden anywhere else in my body. But really, it was my intuition. If I really reflect on the time, something was screaming at me. My inner intuition told me something was wrong, even though the doctors kept saying there wasn't.
Wow.
And I'm glad I listened to, you know, what my intuition was trying to tell me.
Yeah. Because the symptoms of ovarian cancer are so nonspecific that you
yes.
really do need to advocate for yourself and
yep.
to say, you know, I realize that this seems like it may be nothing, but there's something that
wrong.
Is just wrong. I just know my body and this isn't right.
Yes. And, you know, my doctor, like I said, gave me a pill for urinary incontinence. I'm 32 years old. I shouldn't have to go to the bathroom 20 times a day. You know, that is not okay.
Heather, what about you? What about your story?
Well, once I had gone to my primary doctor and she had me do the ultrasound, and I had gone to a gynecologist who said, you know, you should have a hysterectomy, but it's not urgent. And, you know, whenever you want to have it, you pretty much can. But somewhere down the line, you should have a hysterectomy.
So hang on. Just to be clear, were you having no symptoms whatsoever?
No. Just originally, the doctor felt something on my ovary when she was just doing a regular exam, like my primary care doctor. So I really wasn't at that point having any symptoms. And when I went to the gynecologist, I'm married, I have 2 kids. I'm like, I don't have time to take 10 weeks off from work and have surgery if I don't really need it right now. So I put it off a little bit. And then I found out that I did some research that you can have it laparoscopically. It's less time. So, and at that point, I started to feel very tired. Like if I had a day off from work, I'd want to take a nap. And I was just like, I don't know why I'm so tired. You know, is it just I'm working a lot, married, 2 kids, you know, just the regular life. So I had made an appointment to see another doctor, and when I went into her, unbeknownst to me, she was an oncologist, a gynecologist-oncologist. And when I went there, she said to me, do you have cancer? I was like, I don't think so. I said, why? She's like, well, you know, I'm a, you know, oncologist. I said, oh. I said, I had just called to make an appointment. She's like, well, this is what we're going to do. We're going to have you go for another ultrasound. If it's the same spot, because she was looking at my films, if it's the same spot on your ovary as it was before, you know, it's really up to you. You know, you don't need to have a hysterectomy right now. However, if it's grown at all, we need to be concerned because it could be cancerous. So I made the appointment like a week later, went to get the ultrasound. That afternoon, I came home from the ultrasound. She called me. She said, it's almost doubled in size. You're scheduled for surgery next week. It needs to come out right away because I am concerned it can be cancerous. So the following week, I went. I had my surgery. You know, I had a full hysterectomy. They took lymph nodes out. She said there was a spot that looked like, you know, to the common eye, it might be endometriosis, but she felt like it could be cancerous. We had to wait for the pathology. Pathology came back, and it was cancerous. I was staged at 1B. It was a pretty aggressive tumor. So she said a lot of doctors might only have me do 3 rounds of chemo, but she felt we need to be a little bit more aggressive. We did 6 rounds of chemo. I did that. And then I've been cancer-free since.
Wow. So in both cases, this was something that in your case, Heather, you were symptom-free, were living your life aside from fatigue. And it was only because a doctor who happened to be an oncologist as well as a gynecologist said, you know, we're going to check this out and we're going to be very vigilant about the fact that cancer can and does happen in young women. And in your case, Rachel, it was really that you were very persistent about following up and really saying, listen, this needs some attention.
Yes, I think me and Heather both are very lucky. Because most women do not find that they have ovarian cancer until stage 3 or 4. Mm-hmm. And by then, it's very aggressive and it has spread to other places in the body. And it's a harder fight, you know, where I felt my situation, it was scary, but a lot of my treatment was precautionary.
Right.
You know, and I was just very lucky.
And both of you are fairly young. You know, there may be people in the audience who are listening to our show tonight who are thinking, my gosh, I always thought ovarian cancer happens in older women.
Yeah, absolutely. A lot of people do think that it happens in older women. I was 43 when I was diagnosed. I know somebody in Connecticut. She was 8 years old when she was diagnosed. Mm-hmm. And fortunately, she's doing well now. But she had to go through chemo and everything else, too. So there is no age limit on ovarian cancer. And, you know, we really are trying to get the word out because I don't think that there's enough information out there about ovarian cancer and people, you know, sometimes dismiss it or, you know, really they're not educated. They think, oh, I have a pap smear. Well, that detects cervical cancer, but it doesn't detect ovarian cancer. And I think people are confused by that.
So are there any tests for ovarian cancer?
Not screeners. I think if you were a young woman who was experiencing these symptoms, asking the doctor for an ultrasound would probably be
the only
way to really find out.
Well, we're going to learn a lot more about ovarian cancer right after we take a short break for a medical minute. Please stay tuned to learn more information about raising awareness of ovarian cancer with my guests, Rachel Hayes and Heather Glazer.
This year, over 200,000 Americans will be diagnosed with lung cancer, and in Connecticut alone, there'll be over 2,000 new cases. More than 85% of lung cancer diagnoses are related to smoking, and quitting even after decades of use can significantly reduce your risk of developing lung cancer. Each day, patients with lung cancer are surviving thanks to increased access to advanced therapies and specialized care. New treatment options and surgical techniques are giving lung cancer survivors more hope than they ever had before. Clinical trials are currently underway at federally designated comprehensive cancer centers, like the one at Yale, to test innovative new treatments for lung cancer. An option for lung cancer patients in need of surgery is a video-assisted thoracoscopic surgery, also known as a VATS procedure, which is a minimally invasive technique. This has been a Medical Minute, and more information is available at yalecancercenter.org. You're listening to the WNPR Health Forum on the Connecticut Public Broadcasting Network.
Welcome back to Yale Cancer Center Answers. This is Dr. Anise Chagpar, and I'm joined today by my guests, Rachel Hayes and Heather Glazer. We are talking about ovarian cancer and raising awareness of this disease with the first annual Ann Miller 5K Walk. So, Heather, I want to start with you. Tell us a little bit more about how this all started. Who is Ann Miller anyways?
Ann Miller, unfortunately, just recently passed away in April of ovarian cancer. She had ovarian cancer for 5 years. She was cancer-free for a while, and then she had reoccurrences of it. And she was very vocal in the ovarian cancer community, trying to help survivors and people going through ovarian cancer. So we wanted Connecticut Women of Hope wanted to dedicate the first walk, and it's actually going to be a costume walk in her memory. And was an animal lover, so there's going to be dogs there too. People can bring their dogs and walk. And Anne was a remarkable person. She, after she graduated from college, she went into the military, and she assisted in creating the first rape crisis center in the military. And then she did work for in developmental health for the state of Connecticut. So we just want to honor her for all her work that she's done to help people with ovarian cancer, and thought the walk would be a great way to do that.
That's fantastic. So tell me more, Rachel, about how this walk is organized. Where is it raising money, and what does that do? I would imagine that it's certainly raising a lot of awareness about this disease.
I think the primary goal is not to raise money as much as it is to raise awareness. And, Heather might be able to answer this question a little better than I, because I just joined the group for my first meeting last week, and I'm kind of coming in on the tail end of the preparation for the walk.
Sure. We are trying to raise awareness, definitely, and any money that we raise stays in the state of Connecticut. It's going to be at Hammonasset Beach in Madison, Connecticut, and again, it's on the 21st. And we just really want to raise awareness for ovarian cancer. September is National Ovarian Cancer Month, so we feel it's a great time to raise the awareness. Teal is the color for ovarian cancer, so a lot of people will be in costumes with teal representing that. And we just, the awareness is a big piece of the puzzle, because a lot of people aren't aware of the ovarian cancer, and it's happening to younger and younger women, and I think it's important that we need to spread the word out there. And the group also is there to help people, so if someone's going through ovarian cancer, we're a phone call away. We have a website that they can reach out to us, and someone from the group can speak to them. And there are a lot of survivors throughout the state, and I think it helps sometimes if you're going through it that someone else speaks to you, and gives them their story, because it kind of is a comfort to know, someone's gotten through this, I can get through this. Had someone gone through the same type of chemo that you have, if someone can just be there to listen, we're there to do that also.
And that's so important. I can imagine, Rachel, you had mentioned that you had reconnected with Heather years later. What was it like going through your first experience with ovarian cancer at, 31, 32 years old? For most people, they're thinking, man, 31, 32, I'm in my first job, I'm starting to raise a family. Ovarian cancer certainly must have thrown you for a bit of a loop.
It was devastating. I have two young children. At the time, they were 8 and 4 for most of it, and it was very difficult for them, I think, it more than me. I think as a mother, I took my role as a mother before my role as a patient. So I was able to really say, well, there is no option in this. I still have my role as a mother to fulfill. And I had a very supportive family. My mother was my guardian angel. She was there for me every moment I couldn't be for my family. And, losing my hair and having my kids watch that was difficult. But on the other note, I felt the process really taught me a lot about myself as an individual person. Yes, I did. I was sick and I had to go through the chemo and I lost all my hair and our family was emotionally and financially burdened. But in the end, I think I came out of it stronger and more spiritual and more kind of tenacious on life. So in the end, it was good.
It's remarkable to hear cancer survivors say it was good. But I find that that's a common theme, that people can and do get through this disease, and they end up on the other side stronger.
I don't think people realize how strong they are until they are tested. You know, how strong you are mentally until you face chemo every day with a positive attitude. I never thought I could do that, but all I heard the whole 3 months of treatment was, I can't believe how positive you are. You know, it was uplifting to other people.
Yeah, I agree. And I think having a positive attitude is what got me through. You know, my children were also young when I was going through it. They were six and eight. And it was difficult on them. So I tried to do whatever I could to make it easier on them. Family was a huge help also for me. You know, my daughter was a little bit older, so she understood more than my son did. But really just, you know, taking one day at a time and say, you know, I can do this, you know. And definitely you don't realize how strong you are until you have to go through chemo. And, you know, you just say, you know what, I have to do this and I'm going to do it and I'm going to get well. And it definitely a positive attitude will take you, it'll make it much easier.
Yeah. And I can imagine that, you know, the Connecticut Women of Hope, that whole organization of, you know, where women can hear the positive stories of other women must be incredibly empowering.
Oh, I wish I knew about them when I was going through treatment. It wasn't until after that I was able to connect with the Connecticut Women of Hope.
Yeah.
It would have been something I would have loved to have been able to reach out to.
Yeah. You know, something else that strikes me is, and we mentioned it a bit before the break, is how ovarian cancer is this silent killer. And how yet the both of you are so vivacious. And, you know, because you caught it early, both of you, because of your own persistence or your doctor's persistence in getting things checked out, the smallest symptoms really caught this very early. So tell us, what if your doctors told you about your prognosis?
My prognosis is, you know, being stage one, my cancer is graded in two ways. You have your stage and you have your grade. Being stage one, A, my prognosis is excellent because it's early stage. It was just located right in the ovary, didn't spread anywhere else. But the prognosis goes a little bit little different with having a grade three. A grade three tumor, a grade one is not cancerous. A grade two has both non-cancerous and cancerous cells, and the grade three tumor is mostly cancerous, which would be a more aggressive tumor. The likelihood of reoccurrence is a bit higher. But since it was an immature teratoma, those are very responsive to chemo. So if I did have a reoccurrence, there's an excellent chance of the chemotherapy being able to do what it needs to do and the tumors would react to it.
Terrific.
So my prognosis is good.
Excellent.
My prognosis is very good. And the doctor said to me, even like after my first round of chemo, basically, you know, the surgery, the chemo wiped out the cancer. And she said, you know what, this is what's going to happen. You're going to go through six rounds of chemo. Then you're going to come and see me every 3 months for 2 years. Now I go every 6 months. And she's like, after 3 years, I'm going to release you to a regular gynecologist. She's like, I don't see any issues. I don't see any reoccurrence coming up. You know, luckily, honestly, the ovarian cancer was the first time I had any surgery in my life, the first time I was ever in the hospital. I recovered from the surgery very quickly, and she said, well, you were very healthy, other than the cancer, which is kind of funny, but I've never been sick in my life before, so I bounced back relatively quickly, and she said, my prognosis is excellent, so I'm excited about that.
Yeah. I also went a step further after my chemo and did a hysterectomy.
Yeah.
You know, just the peace of mind of not having another ovary or uterus was what I needed to. I already had my children. I was done having a family. So we went a step further and did a full hysterectomy.
And I did the BRCA. I think we both did the BRCA test 1 and 2 because I do have breast cancer in my family on both sides. So that was something that my doctor wanted me to do because breast cancer and ovarian cancer are closely linked. So we wanted to rule out that I carried the gene, and luckily I didn't.
Terrific.
And I, since I had an immature teratoma, which is more of a rare type of ovarian cancer, it wasn't, I didn't need to be tested for the BRCA.
That's fantastic. So I guess, you know, the themes that I'm hearing here are, number one, ovarian cancer can occur in anybody. It doesn't have an age limit. And so if you're young, you still need to be concerned about it. But number two is that if you catch it early, the prognosis is really good, so it's not a death sentence. And you can bounce back and live your life after
most
a diagnosis.
Yes.
Absolutely.
Of ovarian cancer. What has that been like for you? What was it like, A, getting the diagnosis, B, going through the treatment, and C, now that you're on the other side, getting back into living your life? Has it been difficult?
The most difficult part for me was, I am a school teacher. I'm a special education teacher in Naugatuck, and going back to work, being out of work for 6 months, leaving my students, leaving my school, which is like another extension of my family. And when I returned to school, the reaction of some of my students, you know, I wasn't one to go with the wigs. I was more comfortable with just the little bit of hair I had. And, you know, everywhere I went, it just seemed forever. Everyone was always, how are you? You know, it just constantly people reacting to it. You know, it seemed forever before I had enough hair where I didn't look like a cancer patient anymore, or I looked well enough where I didn't look like a cancer patient anymore, that people just talked to me about regular life. And that was the hardest part for me, was going back into the role I was in before, being such a changed person. And even though it was all for the positive, it was still hard. Every day, I think I thought about it. I mean, I'm only 8 months cancer-free. And so it's still a very new concept for me. And when I go back to like the third or the fourth month, that's all I thought about all day was cancer, you know, was this pain cancerous? Was, you know, very, a sense of worry always that it's going to reoccur. Now that I'm 8 months, it's a little better, but it never really goes away. You're always somewhat changed by it. It's like a mourning process. You know, I almost kind of relate it to when my husband lost his father. You go through these series of like grief and mourning, and time does heal things and makes it easier. You don't forget, but the time makes it easier. Every day I don't forget that I had to go through that and that cancer was such a life changer, but the time is making it easier. I'm not so worried.
Yeah. Heather, I guess you're further out from your diagnosis. But one of the questions that I think comes up, and to your point, Rachel, you know, when people have gone through cancer and they've lost their hair and they're getting back into society and people want to show empathy and they say, so how are you? Is that helpful? Or is that just another reminder of, I don't look like my old self again? How do cancer survivors feel? Because I think that your friends and family and audience members who are listening to our show want to know how to show empathy, whether it's better to say, integrate you back just as though nothing ever happened, back to old life, or whether they should really kind of talk about that.
Oh, I think it's good to a point. I think you want to talk about something other than cancer all the time. But for me, I stayed out of work for 10 weeks. I went through my chemo while I was working. So I'd have chemo, take a couple days off, and go back to work. And the routine really helped me. And I think my kids seeing that and so when people would talk to me about having cancer, or, you know, oh, you're so strong, or whatever, you know, it was nice to hear to a point, but it's like there's more to life than cancer.
That's Rachel Hayes with Heather Glazer. If you have questions or would like to add your comments, visit yalecancercenter.org, where you can also get the podcast and find written transcripts of past programs. You're listening to the WNPR Health Forum on the Connecticut Public Broadcasting Network.